You like to listen to audiobooks? Well, record yourself.
Live from Kakariko Village. Broadcast throughout the Retroverse, transmitted to the real world via a maze of wires connecting a Super Nintendo to a Wii, to a Wi-Fi network, and finally to the Internet. The Techno Funk Boy presents the Retro Zoo Super Show. Here are your hosts, Kai and Steven.
Need to kiss the mic?
Please don't kiss the mic.
Nindan.
Oh, and welcome to the Retro Zoo Super Show. Can y'all not kiss the mic for me, please? For 1 hour.
Worst.
For 1 hour.
Worst.
It's already crowded in here. How did y'all get in here anyways?
Listen, I've been counting calories, and I feel like I've lost a pixel or two. So get off my case, dude.
We had to kick drum outside.
Well, that's fine, because he smells like a dirty robot.
Wow.
I'm actually not even here right now. My soul was put into a robot so that I could get in here.
Meta.
Wow. That explains a lot, actually.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Exactly sure I got myself into, honestly.
All right. So we have a lot of people with us. First, coming back from the backlog breakdown. Mm-hmm. My goodness, y'all have to pick a name and stick with it.
Book downs.
Break beat. Back down.
Nate McKeever and Josh Broccolo, thank y'all for coming back.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, happy to be here in spirit.
Yes, and Wes, I know you've been on. I know you were on during Zelda 2 too.
During the audio drama, yes.
Yes. We were on the breakdown beatdown barbecue, but I don't think you've been introduced here.
Have not.
Okay, welcome, Leslie Ray. You are the Henshin dad.
Yes, that is true. I was a little bit, upset though that I did not get introduced as the West Coast Wesley, like I was on the backlog breakdown. Honestly, so I'm a little bit, upset about
that's
that.
That's because Paul's behind the times.
I haven't actually gotten to that episode yet, so.
He's super recorded together. Behind.
I'm way behind.
On that right, episode.
So, I know.
It was like our third one.
Oh, I did have a guest at the only episode of the zoo he's listened to, and I don't mind saying this because he's not going to listen to it, but the only episode of the zoo he's listened to was the one he was on, and he's like a personal friend of mine, and so... But he's listened to that one several times, so that works out.
I like to listen to myself, too. I get it.
All right, so...
half the reason we started a podcast was just so Josh and I could listen to ourselves talk.
That's totally legit. First of all, tell us about podcasts. Whoever would like to go first. Your own podcast, I mean.
Awkward silence.
We only have an hour in this game. It's going to take so long.
You know what, Josh? I'll go on our behalf because the timer that I use to project myself in the 8-bit realm sort of like You know, I'm going to turn it basically into a pumpkin. Anyways. Josh and I host a podcast called The Backlog Breakdown, which is short form, like the TLDR version of this is it's a podcast that examines the issues and like the philosophies and theology behind stewardship, utilizing time well, primarily through the lens of sort of like through the lens of our favorite hobby, video games.
Very cool. All right. So what is Hench and Dad about?
I think it's mostly about chicken legs, mostly.
Nice.
And the hen chin, yeah. No, it is a tokusatsu short form podcast that I produce that's not nearly as, you know, well developed as other ones, nor is it really as important, honestly. It's really
you're a great sales lame.
It's the only tokusatsu podcast that I listen to, Wesley.
It's true. So.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, and I'm
actually honored here. Yes,
I'm thoroughly enjoying it, even though I don't know anything of what you're talking about. You're still very interesting on it.
It sounds like all the D&D talk I heard earlier, but I digress. Exactly. Anyway,
that's also fair.
Talk so. About people wearing spandex and fighting monsters, and maybe growing to the size of buildings and whatnot, and maybe a little Godzilla, and that's pretty much it. That's nice. Pretty lame.
That's what happens in your D&D campaigns.
Yes, that
sounds fantastic.
Yeah, that happens multiple times. We are gathered together here today,
dearly beloved,
to talk about a game I've talked about 500 times before, which of course is Earthbound, aka Mother 2, because a bunch of you are going to get on me for not using the proper Japanese.
See me.
I figured that we, this being just about the weirdest game ever made, and completely random, that we would just fill the studio with people and all talk over each other. And that way you would get an idea of what it's like to play Earthbound. Mm. So... Mm-hmm. Yes. And all of a sudden, you'll all go quiet. It's amazing.
That was the experience for me. It was very quiet. Yeah, like the screen was black the entire time. I didn't understand the point of the game.
That would explain why you didn't like it as much as we do.
You guys told me it was weird, and so like you know, I
you just went with it. 30 hours later, you're like, I guess I won.
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna go to bed now.
I guess I won. No, I ended up playing it through the virtual console on my 3DS, and I had it for a while. Hey, kids! Yeah.
Just like an Earthbound.
No, that's fantastic.
Only fitting.
I love small children. And I'm not being like nasty or.
No, like, one thought you were until that moment.
I just feel like it's recently come to my attention that, like, you know, sometimes I come off as a little like jerkish. I mean, but we've already established. So it's like now I feel like the need to
explain that you're not.
Yeah, it's like I'm not a jerk. Well, I mean, I am, but just not for the reasons people think I am.
True. Not to small children.
No, dude, small children are like the only people on the face of the planet that don't like receive my wrath on a regular basis.
Oh, goodness. So Nate, was this your first time playing it or your first time beating it or what was it?
I had, and not to get too far into the weeds here, but I had emulated it years ago. And now my position on emulation has changed, but I'd emulated it like years ago. That's actually how I played most of the Super Nintendo games I did play, of course. But I had emulated it, and then there was a point in the game where I couldn't figure out what to do to sort of progress the story. And even after I looked it up, it wasn't working for me. And so I just sort of like walked away from it because I was like, this just is like weird. So this was I had picked it up a few times since then, but this was the first time like sitting down and just playing it the whole way through and beating it. So yes, it was the first time all the way through beating it.
Do you remember what was that moment you couldn't get by?
The waterfall.
Waterfall. Yeah. That's been a lot of a lot of deaths of runs in this game has been the waterfall.
Well, and it's like, it's one of those things in hindsight, I'm like, oh no, like, because there's a Mr. Saturn who tells you, wait 3 minutes, like, and then,
but you don't, you cannot believe him. I mean, it's incapable, as a gamer, you are incapable of not touching a button for 3 minutes. I mean, yeah, I had the strategy guide, and the first time I played that section, I pressed the button, because that's, I couldn't take it. It's like, surely there's a button you have to press here, right?
Well, and I mean, like, the thing is, like, literally, even this time, like, I just put my 3DS aside while playing it, went and, like, screwed around on my phone for, like, set a timer on my phone for 3 minutes, and screwed around on my phone for 3 minutes, and I was like, man, I can only imagine, coming into this, like, sort of, like, back in the day, like, and just literally somebody's like, no, you have to sit here for 3 minutes. And I'm like, it just was like, it seemed like it was kind of like the watch pot never boils, or the watch kettle never boils sort of thing. And it was like, or, you know, it was very much like that. Like, I was like, I just, like, it was just one of those things where I was like, this is just weird. And I understand a lot of the game is sort of like satirical and sort of like almost mocking in nature. But that was like just like such a weird disconnect for me in a lot of ways. But
yeah. And I think it was for a lot of people. So for Wes and Josh, y'all have beaten this game before.
Yes, I beat it last year for the first time.
Oh, really? I thought it was earlier than that.
No, I had tried to pick it up years back. And got to, well, actually, I picked up from that save. No, I got past the waterfall. I got to the desert area and then just kind of stopped. Or maybe it was Master Belch. Is the desert right after Master Belch? Because I remember that the place that Master Belch was in was annoying. I just kind of drifted away.
I can't remember.
Okay. But then I picked it up from there, beat it.
All the weirdness kind of runs together.
So
we have, on the program before, we've kind of gotten into a little bit of the game, but essentially you're a small boy, who gets convinced by a fly,
a bee
to take a bat and go wail on people in town and other towns and to go around the world wailing on people. And you meet, and dogs, yes.
Dogs and crows, yeah.
And crows. And you meet up with some other people who have psychic powers so that they can help you just beat up everything. And by everything, I mean you beat up a tent, you beat up puke.
Coffee? Musical notes?
You beat up abstract art, which I think vinyl we can all records. Agree with. Vinyl records. And then eventually you save the world from a thing that is the bad guy that is kind of not clear in the game what he is. So maybe you save the world. Maybe you're just a crazy child who likes beating up people.
I have to sort of like note that I did appreciate the fact that this reinforced what I've always thought about the world, is that violence does solve a number of problems. And if you just, you can beat things back into like normalcy.
Yes. Yeah. And that's one of the things I love about the game, is that you don't actually kill a lot of things. You beat animals until they're tame, or you beat people until they return back to normal.
Yep.
Yeah, and then they go pick flowers and stuff. You also beat up hippies, which is also great.
Yeah,
I think we can all agree with that one.
Wesley's like, he got real quiet when we talked about beating up hippies. What are you not telling us, Wesley?
I am from the West Coast, and I do have longer hair, so, you know, put two and two together.
Oh, goodness. So when the crazy alien demon thing comes, we know what side you're on.
So Wesley, like you and Paul sort of sit on the other side of the table. When was the first time you played this game?
The first time that I actually like played it, I actually had a cartridge in my hand. I think I purchased it when I was about 15 after reading about it in the Chris Kohler Power Up book. And I was like, okay. Oh, this sounds really good. And then I bought it. I think it was like $60 or so. Got it delivered to my house and then tried to play through as much as I could and got pretty far, at least to the point where you get poo. But it's at that point where I was just like, oh my goodness.
To the bathroom.
Exactly, yes.
Because of the poo. For
13 get years, it? Apparently.
You know what? Someday he'll be King Poo.
That's true.
The armless, legless, eyeless, earless King Poo.
What was the part that really tripped me up? Yes, and that's when I think I actually put it down.
You know, if it's like most monarchies, he probably holds some sort of like rank in the army. He could be a General Poo or a Major Poo. Sorry.
Keep talking, I'm fine.
But anyway, yes. So eventually it got to the point, though, I got to poo and everything and all that. And then my brother started playing. Shut up. And then my brother started playing the game as well. And one day he took it out of the Super Nintendo, the cartridge. He took this cartridge out of Nintendo without properly like doing all the things that you're supposed to do with it. And everything got erased on that cartridge. And I was so mad at him for like probably about 12 years after that. And no, he could still take me. That's a problem.
Baseball bat.
Violence did not solve that problem. And then a couple years later, I went ahead and actually imported the Mother 1 and 2 Game Boy Advance cartridge and tried to play it in Japanese, and that didn't work very well for me. And then eventually last year, I was like, oh, hey, I really got to play through this game because I call myself a fan, but I'm not really a fan unless I really play the game. So I went through it last year on the 3DS Virtual Console.
Oh, wow, nice. Cool. Well, I bought it off the shelf, new, in the giant box.
Whoa. Oh, man.
So I'm old.
I'm jealous.
Yeah, man. So like when I was in high school, I delivered pizzas and I had no expenses because I was in high school, right? And and so like I was a senior, and this was like at the height of the NES, the SNES greatness, and I'd go to Walmart after finishing a game and just pick up whatever RPG was sitting there. Mm-hmm. And and so ended up with that one. What else did I get in that time period? Legend of Mana, Secret of Evermore.
Ooh.
I can't remember if Final Fantasy III was a little bit before that. I know Final Fantasy II was well before that, but Breath of Fire, not Breath of the Wild. Yeah. Nate, settle down. I didn't say Breath of the Wild.
No, I knew you meant Breath of Fire. So, which is like, that's like a weird sort of series that dropped off. I'm just glad that like somebody else has played Secret of Evermore. It just like, that's like a weird one that doesn't get like a lot of love or press or anything, and it's like that's like one of those weird games that I'm like, I really want somebody to bring that back in a way that I can play it legally.
One of my favorites from that time period, I don't know if y'all have played this one, this is another one that was a just absolute genius concept game that did not get a lot of love, but Lufia 2.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all know that one?
I do.
Man, that game is.
Yeah,
that game is incredibly great, and that's one like Lufia 1 was like this almost independent, you know, just normal JRPG, nothing special about it. And then Square took it, and they put in like these capsule monsters that you hatch out of capsules, and then you feed them until they evolve. Before Pokemon, they put in limit breaks before Final Fantasy did. And all the dungeons were these puzzles that had monsters on the map. And so you can kind of strategically move them to fight them at optimal positions and stuff. It was a fascinating game.
I remember the puzzle elements in that game being sort of like one of the most outstanding things I had ever like
Yeah, that's just great. But that is not, we will do a series on that, but not today.
Not today.
So, yeah. So Earthbound, I gets a lot of love for being as innovative as it is. And we've gone through some of the stuff that makes it so innovative. But it's just an exceedingly quirky game where,
spankety.
Exactly. Its tongue is always firmly in its cheek. Everything is so, so random and oftentimes so funny. I remember on the AVGN video of it, he talks about actually enjoying talking to townspeople just to see what kind of craziness they're going to say. And some of the stuff that they introduce in this game are just giant steps ahead of what was happening in JRPGs at the time, and has had a huge influence. We've talked.
Isn't that one of the areas in the game?
Yeah, giant step.
Giant step.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. That was an accident. I mean, on purpose.
So, only the best radio.
It's had a huge influence. Its soundtrack is, I think, safe to say, completely unique for this era of gaming.
Except for the plagiarism.
Plagiarism or sampling? Okay. Are we gonna get into Never Gonna Give You Up? Oh, no, that's Chrono Trigger. Never mind.
Yep.
I'm on the wrong game, too. I have a rant about that, too.
He was not happy with my analysis that Robo's Theme was basically, and they had been pointed out to me by Josh. So he was not happy with us saying that, Josh.
All right, yeah. I will repeat my rant at another date. Okay, so what plagiarism? I'm curious.
Oh no, I just meant stealing, sampling. Yeah, like you said, sampling and reusing stuff without permission.
Ah, yes.
As you have gone into detail about with your previous episodes. So go listen to those episodes if you're interested.
Yes. Yes. I go into sampling a lot. That was a lot of fun.
I'm honestly surprised that they could actually re-release the game with all that sampling in there in the modern day on the SNES
kidding.
Classic and the Wii U and everything. I'm just like, how did you get away with that? And how are people not making a stink about this, honestly?
I'm pretty sure people at Nintendo are just praying every night that Paul McCartney does not start playing video games.
I think though too, it's some of the same themes are there, but there's enough sort of distortion and sort of playing with it that if you know it's there, yeah, then it's super easy to pick out. But I think if somebody were just sort of sitting down and playing through some of that stuff, I'm really pretty that they've sort of been tweaked enough that people are oh, that kind of sounds like X, Y, or Z, but I'm not sure that you can really sort of make the case that it's straight. It's very similar. I just think there's a case to say it's different enough.
I'm sure that will be what Nintendo says in court, but thankfully Paul McCartney has not played it. So this is going to be a two-part episode or two episodes on the same topic, but we're going to get more into more of the story elements later. But I'm really curious, as this game always seemed to me to not really rely on story much at all until the end. But instead rely on just the sheer personality of it. Most of the plot is essentially a fetch quest. It's, hey, go collect eight of the thing, that has plagued RPGs since the dawn of time. You got to prove yourself by collecting the thing. And that's most of the plot. But it's the kind of characters and personality of the towns themselves that really set this thing apart.
I agree. And actually, I think the way that it took me to look at it is because it took me a while to kind of understand the way that the game works. Cause a lot of the RPGs that I really like, it does, you know, tell a story, you know, pretty much a three act structure kind of a right. thing where things are connected. But to me, it felt more like what really kind of clicked for me was when I started thinking of it like a Dragon Quest game. Because it's more a series of vignettes like Dragon Quest does. And when I started looking at it that way, it made a lot more sense. So the beginning and the end, yeah, kind of tie it together, but everything in the middle, they're each their own separate little story. And that really, yeah, it just helped me kind of think about this game differently than kind of your standard RPG. And I think it actually works well because the characters in the game are so random and unique. They don't have to be talking about other portions of the game. They don't have to know what's going on in the rest of the world. Like, it's just, okay, you're in Tucson. Everyone here in this town is just going to be weird and do what you want and talk to everyone because they all have something weird to say. It's a lot of fun. But you don't have to be concerned with the overall story. You don't have to be talking to townspeople to get the story. It's more just like, oh, check out this weird pseudo-American town where everyone's strange and stop staring at my hips.
Those hips don't lie. Those hips don't lie.
Yeah. The number of times she says that. It's so funny, just to like these little I don't know how old they're supposed to be, but basically 10-year-old kids. Stop looking at my hips.
they're definitely like preteens. I think like one of my sort of like favorite sort of like running gags was like the broke musicians with the what was the Blues Brothers knockoff, like
Runaway Five.
Oh, they're so good.
It's like that you go through this sort of like and you go through this sort of thing where it's like. You find this wad of bills and then you give that to this corrupt sort of like, you know, and I'm like, this is so much realism, such wow. Because this is exactly how it works in real life. A band gets themselves into debt and they have to play a bunch of shows until they basically die. Or you find, and then you magically find like a wad of cash and you fling it at the corrupt manager and they're free to go.
Only to get in trouble two towns later.
It's even more real.
They get themselves in this predicament not once, but twice. And I'm like, yo, you dudes have some serious judgment impairment going on here, bros. Like, you probably need to talk to your agent and get some better booking.
One of my favorite running gags is Apple Kid. Just... you know, showing up with the craziest inventions and just when you first meet them, they do everything possible to make you think that Apple Kid is just a screw up.
Now he's the obvious bad choice.
Right. Yeah. Cause it's Apple Kid and, Orange Kid. Yeah. Yeah. And Orange Kid is like, everything's pristine. He looks very professional. He's well spoken, you know,
and he's useless. Useless.
Oh, it is so funny when you're most of the way through the game and he starts telling you about like an invention he made and it's just like, okay, that I wouldn't even use that if I weren't trying to save the world, but thanks.
Trout flavored yogurt.
The trout flavored yogurt, but that was useful. That was useful. I was going to say one of Apple Kid's or Orange Kid's inventions was turning raisins back into grapes. And I'm like, I'll be full disclosure. I would probably be down for that because outside of like trail mix, I think raisins are kind of gross.
Bad, yeah.
It would at least be fun to watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those two
something that was pointed out to me. Oh, sorry. What were you going to say, Wes?
I was saying like, aren't those two basically supposed to be like parallels to Bill Gates and Steve Jobs functionally? Because you have Orange Kid who's supposed to be like Microsoft and Apple Kid who's supposed to be like Apple. Or something? I don't know.
Well, that was actually what I was going to say is something that I was pointed out to me recently.
Did you just try to steal his brilliant point? Because that was exactly what I was supposed to say too.
Just a little bit farther. He made the point, and it's a good point, but Apple Kid gives you a telephone.
Ooh. Ah, very nice.
Back in the 90s.
Back in the 90s, yes, because that made sense.
Now, you can only receive
before
calls on
the iPhone. Right. Kind of weird.
He did give you that receive phone thing, yes.
There's time travel in this game, too. So
there is time travel, yes.
I just thought that was interesting.
Dude, I'm just going to, like, did anybody else sort of, like, I felt bad for, like, the dad, who is just sort of, like, this weird, like, schmuck that, like, I use save states, obviously, but it's like he would call me on the receiver phone or whatever and be like, hey, you should take a break. I was like, no, I will not.
Nope.
Like, shut up, absentee dad.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't make me happy, but I understand your point about the fate of the world being at stake.
Yeah. Oh, see, now I love the dad, and it is one of those gags that can get old, because to save the game, you have to go through a lot of dialogue with him. So the video that one of you sent the other day, and I have not played Mother, and I played Mother 3 until I cried and put it up. And I'm not joking. And so, but
the first 10 minutes right there, so.
Right, yeah, pretty much. in this video, it says that the dad is Ninten from the first game?
Well, that doesn't exactly line up because of the dates that you're given in both of the games. I want to say the first Mother, and it takes place in 88, and then in Mother 2 takes place in 1990X. So I don't think so, unless there's some really weird stuff going on.
Like high school?
Well, this podcast is PG. So, I mean, there's time travel as well, so maybe, possibly. But, you know, I don't know. They're probably related because they look almost exactly the same, but, you know.
I thought that was interesting because I have not played Mother, and so next episode is going to be really interesting because... first of all, we're going to do a quick poll around the room. Pronounce the bad guy's name.
Gygas.
Yes.
Gygas.
Everybody's Gygas except me?
Said Gygas.
I've been saying it Gygas for the last few years, but I said it Gygas initially when I got the game because I do that. It's the same thing when I first played Final Fantasy II and I pronounced it Cecil. And then some years later, I started pronouncing it Cecil.
Hey, guys.
Technically.
Actually.
Actually. Hey, I gotta bounce... but I was thinking like
I was about to let you tell what you hated about the game. Well, no, that's too bad.
I would obviously recommend editing some of this out. I'll send you my audio, and So I'll just pretend like, oh no, there's a malfunction. This thing was supposed to be good for another 20 minutes. What the heck? I want my money back. Oh no!
Before you go, can you squeeze in for a picture?
No.
Dang.
Negative. I don't want the Russian bots using FaceApp to steal my face.
Oh, the people who listen to this episode 3 years from now are going to have no idea. But it's a thing. All right. Thanks, man.
Yeah. Sorry, guys.
I really was going to give him a chance to say what he didn't like about the game, but I think we can all sum it up by saying inventory system.
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that it is rough. Again,
it's tough. It's
think
tough
about
to work
Dragon
with.
Quest.
Yeah,
that's kind of how it made sense to me.
Well, yeah. The only real reason that the inventory system is so bad in this game is because of the sheer number of unique items.
Yeah,
there, exactly. And I think that was I do think that was so intentional that that they were sitting there. It was like, well, let's just throw this in. It's like, you know, you only have like 3 spaces to put inventory. It's like, I know it's gonna be hilarious. They're gonna be like sweating it out on what to keep, what to throw away. What is this? What do these socks do? I don't know.
What's this bicycle all about?
So
keep the pencil eraser on hand.
I made that mistake. That the pencil eraser thing is also one of my favorite running gags, especially when you get to the giant iron eraser, and you're like, oh crap, what do we do now? Oh, we'll just get an eraser.
Yeah, that was great, and I also really liked the zombie paper.
Zombie paper was funny. Especially when you go in there afterwards and all the townspeople are there basically just kicking the zombies on the ground and stuff. It's so good. Any other of moments that you just especially liked or disliked in the game?
I think the whole section with Ness and his like magic hand type dream thing was pretty like not only trippy but really interesting, like visually.
Oh yeah,
honestly, where he has to like confront himself basically.
Yeah, yeah, and AVGN. And by the way, I mean, you know, we don't recommend Angry Video Game Nerd to all of our listeners. He's not a PG YouTube channel, but he did a fantastic video on this game, and that he highlighted the moment where you meet the young you, and the young you basically is inviting you to play, and he's like, oh, you can't because you're busy. Okay, is a really touching moment.
It seems to be kind of like bring a parallel to Ness's dad as well, since he's basically an absentee father in that regard. Yeah. So it's kind of interesting because he's like catching Ness in his like transition between being a kid and being an adult, and his younger self is like, oh, hey, okay, I can't play with me. I'm sorry. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. That is really interesting because, yeah, he's even though this is a coming of age story, you know, it's not one of those things that is saying, hey, coming of age is all good. There's a lot good to it, and there's a lot that's not. And he has to face what he's leaving behind. And in essence, he is becoming, you know, like his dad is. I mean, really just communicating with his mom by telephone or when aliens take over the town and he has to go to the meteor. And so, yeah, that whole section is really interesting and pretty much every line of dialogue in that section is really profound.
Yeah, I guess you could take it that way. I would also take it that way in which it's more of a form of acceptance. Like you're not, Ness isn't that kid anymore.
Yeah.
So it's almost, I mean, I guess in relation to his father, it is kind of identifying himself a little bit more with manhood, and that you do have, like, there are actual things that need to get done, if that makes sense, especially in the case of, you know, fighting off an intergalactic being that's going to destroy the world.
Right. Right, yeah.
I don't know that it's all negative. I think it's also...
Oh, no. I know. I don't think it's all negative. I think it's really interesting because they are taking an honest look at...
Yeah.
And not only what's ahead, but what's behind. And
there's
this really interesting streak of nostalgia running through the game. Even the settings, which are... They don't seem necessarily, like, specifically the 90s. There seems to be a mix between everything from the 50s to the 90s. But there's a lot of nostalgia running through all of it. But there's also a lot of pushing forward. And, you know, even at the end, it's like, when you talk to Jeff for the last time, it seems like, okay, now we're all going to adulthood. I'm going to go work on inventions. You're going to go marry Paula probably someday. So invite me when you do. And we're different now. And you're right. There's a lot of good to that too.
Yeah. There's a part in, I mean, I guess this is spoilers because this is the very, very, very end of Mother. But there is a tease at the end of Mother where it actually shows Nintendo's dad from behind. He's trying to contact him in a payphone, saying that something else is happening. So, yes, it is absentee, but at the same time, like, you get a sense that he's working on something super important as well.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. That's really cool.
It's what the game pauses at, like, the end. It's that scene, and, right, like, you have to reset the game in order to play anything else.
Yeah. So, one of the things that is kind of connected to this is that the game's tone and its kind of goofy veneer really lets it deal with some darker stuff that a lot of games would shy away from. You know, every single time I play the game and I get to, I mean, even something simple like, you know, Jeff going to his father's place, and his father just has like this throwaway line that says, okay, well, maybe I'll see you again in however many years, you know, and it is like really, really dark thing to say to a kid. but it's also so goofy that it kind of rolls into the general tone of the game. But there's a lot of stuff like that is really, I mean, to repeat the phrase, it's kind of dark and, mm-hmm. And you don't notice it kind of sneaking up on you until the end. I was playing a lot of it in front of Anla, and she thought it was the goofiest thing in the world until I got to the last fight, and she was like, oh, this game is not what I thought it was, you know, but that stuff's in there. It's just kind of building under the surface.
Yeah. Wes, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was also going to point out like the entire character of Pokey, like throughout the entire game, it's just like, that's just a tragedy basically. If you like examine it and see where he goes from there, and there are, you know, spoilers, but there's a continuation of his story in Mother 3 that just really hits at home, like even more so, and just seeing like what it is like being absent of friends and positive influences, that he's willing to grab onto this evil character that's kind of twisting him into this this even worse version of his bad self, honestly. So it's just really interesting to see his negative growth over the period of the game.
His descent.
I mean he is a great villain of the game, but he's also a very tragic character. I mean, whose parents are clearly like not interested in things they should be interested in, you know, and who doesn't have friends, and deservedly so because he's a jerk, but yeah, it's like every time you see him, he's taken yet another step, down that path. That is really going to culminate in the part I read about on Mother 3, because it's past the part where I cried and turned it off.
Yeah. I think also one thing that's really interesting to me about that character is, like you said, Kai, that it is one of those things that kind of sneaks up on you. Because in the original Japanese version, like, basically, he's called Pokey here in the English translation, but that was a mistranslation. His name is actually supposed to be Porky. So, like, he's a joke from the very beginning. Like, his name literally means fat kid, you know? Like, you're supposed to, you know, think that he's worthless from the very beginning. And so what he turns into is pretty, it's pretty dark, it's pretty harrowing to see. You know, how he continued, because he's played for laughs a lot until, like towards the very end. And it's like, oh, like you've teamed up with, with this thing.
Well, you know, and even then it's like, and I talked about his battle theme in a previous episode, but the start of that song is in a, you know, old 8-bit style, and it's designed to make you think, oh, this is the goofy guy before the main bad guy.
Right.
And then about a minute into the song, all of a sudden there's noises coming out of your Super Nintendo that you've never heard out of that thing before. And that's around when it's starting to dawn on you that this guy's no joke. He's actually a legit villain. I think that's pretty cool the way they kind of set that up, both narratively and musically.
Yeah, man. I think another scene for me that kind of exemplifies what you're saying, how the dark stuff is played with a comedic tone, is the Happy Happiests.
Oh, like, gosh, yeah.
That
oh, gosh.
Whole portion of the game, again, it's almost played for laughs, but it's like, oh, my God, like this entire town is brainwashed.
Yeah. and the leader legit traffics Paula.
Yeah.
I mean, to be his wife, a preteen girl. Yeah. And I mean, that's pretty intense.
And I thought it was very insightful that they called him the happy happiests. It reminded me, and you know, their entire mantra is, you know, be happy and make the world a better place, when like they're really this terrible organization. There's another joke like that in Parks and Rec, if you're a fan of Parks and Rec, where there's this cult called the Reasonableists, who believe that there's this alien that's going to come and destroy the Earth and suck them all up. So it's that same kind of joke where it's just like, yeah, it feels like it's played for laughs, but it's very intentional at like, actually, the opposite of everything they're saying is true.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's just the visuals in that section is most entertaining. It's a distraction to the eyes. It's like, you know, no, it's everything's blue. It's pretty. And things are not good here. The whole section, first of all, it cracked me up when you're in, I forgot what they called it, but the part of Foreside when you're, you're being sucked into the Moonside? Trophy. What's that?
Is it in Moonside? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, Moonside. That's right. Yeah. The first time I got attacked by abstract art cracked me up. I laughed out loud on that. It's one of those things that, you know, the game is just amping up the goofy, section. But once you kind of take it out and you realize it's like, no, this artifact is just seriously warping everyone's perception on things, and you've just kind of been walking around this warehouse thinking you were in this town is when you just kind of pause and think about what all of this is doing to the people of these towns, it's like you can kind of quickly get past the neon light veneer of it and they
represent that mechanically too, because once you get to Moonside, like the combat just gets ramped up so high, like those things just pummel you one after another, and there's just like, how do I heal? Oh my goodness, I am like basically like one HP this entire time because it's just so hard to like beat any of the enemies there.
And you don't know where you're going. Like I found that area pretty frustrating, honestly.
Yeah.
Like I did it with save states too, so.
Yeah, that's one of the things. I mean, and this game originally came with the player's guide, and this player's guide is one of my favorites of all time. Just the creativity that went into this thing was just really wonderful. But this is one of the sections that explains why, because you don't walk in a straight line. You have to find these people who will teleport you around town. You have to find the right combination to get you through this area, because there's certain places you just can't walk, and they're not represented on the map as places you can't walk. You just can't walk there. Mm-hmm. And you really are just really kind of just feeling around trying to figure out, where in the world am I going?
You just feel like hopelessly lost at that point, and it's just like, what do I do? I had to resort to a guide at that point, but
and I did too.
I'm shocked that people in Japan were able to figure this out without a packed in guide, honestly.
No kidding.
In that town, do I remember right that you can't stay in the hotel, or am I making that up in my head?
I don't remember.
I have no idea.
I think there are problems with healing in that area. Like the hotel guy won't let you stay or something.
You've also lost Paula at that point, so you don't have any of your PSI stuff, if I recall. Right. Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, because that's part of the quest to go save her.
Hmm.
So yeah, there's a lot of stuff that we haven't talked about. We brought up Pooh's legs and arms and ears and eyes getting removed,
which is entirely disconcerting.
When this game, and I can't remember what it was, but it might be the only time it was run at a Games Done Quick, or it might have been just one of the times. One of the people on the couch just kept saying, and just remember, there is no point in this game where it stops getting weirder. And and it's absolutely true. It's and like, you know, you're fighting a giant circus tent, and it's like, no, the next section is going to be weirder. Just wait. The They let somebody explain the music of the game during the waterfall scene because they had 3 minutes where no one was doing anything, and so it was really kind of awesome. Some of the mechanics I just like this time. I don't know, and it might be nostalgia on my part, but like one of the things that I just find really interesting is like when you've gone a while without talking to your mother, you get homesick, and that's a status ailment in this game. Mm-hmm. And you have to call her. And what she said, because normally her messages are like really somewhat kind of goofy, and she's running all over the place and just says, okay, well, be good. But
my favorite soap opera.
Right. Yeah. She hangs up her soap opera. I think she like has some exercise class or something. I forgot. But a lot of them are just kind of very, very frivolous and very surface level. But that's the one where she stops and talks to you. And, you know, the first time that happened to me in this playthrough was like I found that really touching. And then the next 12 times it was like, okay, and I'm done with this, mom. So we are running up to the end of our hour, and we lost Nate, so we can't take a picture with him, but at some point we're going to have to. So y'all want to crowd in?
Okay,
hold on, I'll get Drum to take it. All right, on three, say Fuzzy Pickles. 1, 2, 3.
Fuzzy Pickles. Victory.
And in that picture we'll play during the ending credits. In the end, just the sheer quirkiness and humor of this game is really just kind of impossible to address in an hour, but there's just a lot of like really fun elements to this that and a lot of them just literally laugh out loud moments.
Yeah.
That I think are just charming and sometimes adorable, hilarious, and always unexpected, even on my second playthrough. It's very different than the other games of the time. And it has had a big influence in a lot of the elements that it innovative has been, carried forward. But, I think the game's just an amazing accomplishment.
Yeah, I would also say, as someone who came to it later in life, that it's not a game where you're going to fall head over heels for the combat or the story, or it's not one of those games where it's like there's one specific thing about this game that's really good. It doesn't have deep, it's not like the one that comes to mind because of a podcast I listened to recently is like Final Fantasy Tactics, where you can just get real deep in all the systems of the game or in all the lore of the game. It's not like that. So if you go in expecting that, well, you're gonna have some problems. It is much more of a game where you take your time with it and you enjoy the moments that it gives you. Not that the combat is not engaging or bad. It's not. It's good for what it. We didn't talk about things like the rolling HP counter or the enemies that are actually on the overworld map. It's not random. So there are really good things that the game does as well. But if you focus too much on one area, I think you might walk away unsatisfied. It's really a game in which the overall tone it is what you're going for, and you really just have to enjoy the moments as they come rather than get super obsessed over one specific thing. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And for me, like, we really like hit it on the head with the nostalgia angle for me. Like, that's like one of the reasons why I keep going back to it, because it just feels nostalgic, even though I wasn't like a kid when I really played the game or anything. I got it when I was a teenager, but it just feels like it's that part of Americana that I am so like attuned to, being, a kid that grew up in the 90s, basically. And that's just like, it feels familiar. Yeah. And it's just like a nice warm blanket, basically, or just a nice cool summer night where you're just looking up at the stars. It's got that general feeling to it, just very comforting and very inviting for me, at least.
Right, exactly. All right. So that is going to do it for this episode. We are going to jump back into this game in next episode when we're actually going to talk about part of the plot and dig into that a little bit. I do want to announce just very, very quickly, we actually hit a Patreon goal that I forgot I set up, but we hit it. And Patreon said, hey, we hit your goal, so you have to do more work. And so it's like, okay, well, we're going to do that then. So for those who remember our jam episodes, early on, which we're going to be playing and analyzing some game music. We are going to be bringing that back for our patrons. And so patrons, be on the lookout for that. There is an RSS feed, set up for you on the page that you can put into your, podcast catcher. Or you can just follow the emails when they're sent that I have posted something else. But we are going to start doing that. So I'm actually pretty pumped about that because I've missed doing that. I miss sharing some great game music with y'all. So we'll jump into that. But until then, we will catch you next week.
This game stinks.
Oh, we didn't say this game stinks.
I've been saving that one the whole time.
Oh. Okay. And we'll see you next week.
Stop looking at my hips.
The Retro Zoo Super Show is brought to you by the Techno Punk Boy. Follow us on Twitter at TechnoFunkBoy, on Facebook at the TechnoFunkBoy, and sign up for our email list at TechnoFunkBoy.com. Also look for us on Spotify, iTunes, and Amazon for music. If you are so inclined, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on your favorite podcast catcher. If you are not so inclined, you are obviously some sort of villain trying to conquer the world. Unowned music and gameplay clips are used for educational and critical purposes. Thank you for listening. Keep gaming. Unless you have responsibilities that need to be done at this time, then you can game later.